Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I am Becky, and sitting right over there on his own microphone is Cedric Skysetti, and you are listening to the Happy Project Podcast.
Listen.
What am I hearing? Listening to what?
You know. You're listening to...
Yeah. Oh, it is.
The Happy Project.
The Happy Project Podcast.
Yeah.
Season four, baby.
Yes, this is season four. Now, for those of you who have been long-term listeners, you might not even be aware that we have seasons. It's kind of arbitrary, to be honest. We just kind of decided.
This is episode 124, though.
Yeah.
Unless we did our math wrong.
Right.
Which is possible.
It is possible.
That's a lot of episodes.
But we thank you guys so much for listening. And we hope that you're as excited about the resurrection of the podcast just as much as we are. So we're starting season four.
Episode one.
Clean slate.
Starts right now.
Yeah. So I did want to make a couple of announcements.
Ooh.
First is, of course, we've got the podcast going on. Second, by the time this podcast is out, you might already be aware, but the Happy Project website is going to be live. And the website is something that we've been working on for the past few weeks. And it's kind of... it's a stopping point. If you're looking up the Happy Project online, you'll come across there. We have cultural observations, articles that have been written about us or that we have written. You have my personal blog. We thought it might be nice after a lot of internal struggle to decide, okay, maybe I should be more open or transparent about my own experiences, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of people would be curious to know about the mysterious founder of the Happy Project, the face behind the project.
Yes.
I mean, it's like your face is on the logo.
That's true. That is my face, if no one knew that. Yeah.
And my face too, as well. But the website looks really cool, really great. Of course, I could see the behind the scenes, like what's going on with it. So
all the crying and staying up late. Just kidding. It hasn't been that dramatic.
Yeah. So once it's live, like definitely check it out.
Yeah.
And it'll be something that will be updated frequently.
Yeah. It's going to be, a live website. Well, okay, live. Let's not live, but like it'll be continually growing, let's say, always including more information and sharing more things. We've got some portraits and photography from places that we've been in Korea or people that we have met and some of their backstories. And I think it's going to be a really interesting site for people to be a part of. There's also a section for guest writers because we know that many people who are part of the Happy Project, this could be you, would love to share your own story in your own words, more than just a picture, but maybe your own experience or background or short story or poem, because there's definitely a lot of people who have their creative outlets besides, just a little blurb that we put on our Instagram. So we're creating that place. So it's not just my voice. It's not just Cedric's voice talking about the mixed Korean experience, but it is also your voice. And we wanted to provide a way to do that. So yeah, you can check out the website. I hope you guys like it. It's going to be awesome. And if you want to write, of course, you can contact us, thehappyproject@gmail.com. And then the final thing I wanted to share, this is not really about us. But two of our good friends got married today.
Ooh.
In Korea.
Woo! Yeah, congrats to them. A little jealous, not gonna lie.
Yeah, I'm a little jealous too, to be honest. The wedding was so beautiful and we're a little envious because we haven't been able to have our wedding ceremony yet. But that takes nothing away from them. They are really like… an amazing love story that has lasted for years.
Mm-hmm.
They've been together for years. And just due to the nature of their backgrounds, one is Korean and one is from the Caribbean.
Yeah.
But living in New York, they met in New York City. So we've got like visa stuff and family and just all these crazy things that have gotten in the way over and over and over again. And finally, to be able to see them have this beautiful ceremony with all their family and friends. It was such a beautiful thing. So we just want to say congratulations to our two friends.
Yeah, congrats. Wish we were there, but nevertheless, we were there in spirit.
Yes, absolutely. All right. You ready to dive into what we have today?
I'm so ready.
Okay, guys. Well, get ready because today we're going to talk a little bit about the immigrant family experience. The immigrant family experience. Yeah, there's a lot that goes into that. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm over here trying to hold in my cough.
You can cough. It's okay.
I have a small little cold that I'm trying to battle out right now. So if you hear me struggling in the background,
just coughing in the corner,
it is me. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm okay.
It's okay. You can take your time. But yeah, we're going to talk about that. I think obviously this is an enormously broad subject.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, just so much to be said about it. But we are not going to get into anything political when it comes to immigration. We are purely coming from the actual experience that we ourselves have had growing up, what we've observed, our parents, and those of our friends and their families.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, of course, you can imagine that a lot of it would be anecdotal. But, I mean, that's really where the heart of the stories are coming from, things that we have witnessed ourselves.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting because I feel like a lot of you who are out there listening, either you are an immigrant, maybe child, and you have immigrant parents and grew up that way, wherever you may be in the world, or you might actually be the immigrant,
mm-hmm.
And you have been transplanted to another location in a foreign land. But whoever you may be, we think that this will be interesting because, I mean, I think everyone has so many different experiences. What I find interesting is, especially in recent times, I've noticed quite an uptick in different stories, like immigrant stories being told through like entertainment, maybe film.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been interesting to see that because I think it's cool to highlight different immigrant experiences. And you know, I'm talking about more so the context of the U.S. because that's where we are at mm-hmm. the moment. And so I've been noticing this and I think it's cool because it is vastly different many times. Well, most of the times, if not all of the time, from an experience of a family that has grown up here, mm-hmm. for example, in America. And so it's very interesting to see the differences.
Mm.
And I guess we could start with like the parental dynamics, right,
mm-hmm.
of the immigrant family experience. So
yeah.
For me, my father, he grew up in the States and my mom was the immigrant. And so, you know, my dynamic is American father, Korean mother.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is the angle that I'm going to come from experientially.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe,
yeah, same thing.
Yeah, same for Becky. But you know, we know that there are a lot of families and even happy families, or I guess happy kids with parents that might both be immigrants.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think it's just vastly different. And one of the ways that it is different is obviously, you come to a foreign country and you got to figure out how to survive. How do you survive?
Mm-mm-mm.
And a lot of immigrant families, they maybe they come to a foreign country and, you know, they don't have much that they've brought with them.
Sure.
Right? So they got to figure out how to survive. So in the case of the U.S., for example, let's just say you have an immigrant family coming from another country. And I'll use Koreans in this context.
Uh-huh.
You know, a lot of times, especially a couple of decades ago when you had a wave of immigrant Koreans coming to the U.S., a lot of them didn't come with much,
yeah.
You know, and a lot of them didn't have anything. So they had to do what they can. And a lot of them started businesses.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's why you see a lot of immigrant families that might have small businesses. Korean families are well known to own like dry cleaning businesses.
Yeah.
Many of them
own nail salons.
Yeah. Also like hair beauty supply,
uh-huh.
those type of things. And so that in and of itself is vastly different from, say, parents that, you know, work a 9-to-5 at a company.
Yeah.
And maybe at, you know, 5:30, they clock out and they come home. They're home by 6 and dinner's ready and you have dinner with the family.
Yeah.
A lot of immigrant, like, parents, they're working long hours
right.
because they have to make ends meet. So that already changes the dynamic in the household.
I know. Isn't it crazy? Like, when you think about it, right? You could, it's like, a lot of your experience growing up, your childhood is shaped enormously by your parents, your dynamic with them and their dynamic with each other. And you learn what is like, what a household is run, how a household is run, or what's the responsibility, what's your place in a family structure by, you know, just observing on the natural day-to-day basis how your parents interact with each other and how they interact with you and how they interact with the world. And it's so easy to forget that that is sometimes startlingly different than how mainstream society says parents should treat their kids, mm-hmm. or how parents should interact with each other, or how parents are with the rest of the world. And as the kid of an immigrant or part of an immigrant family, you might feel just by that alone, almost like, what? No, that's not really how people raise their kids. Or no, that's not what your relationship is with work and society, because your experience is fundamentally so different. It's like, you know, sometimes you and I will, just for fun, we'll be like, hey, what do you think American kids eat? Like,
you know what I mean? Right.
Right? Which is such a silly question, because a lot of people are like, oh yeah, we just ate food growing up in America.
Meatloaf, fried chicken, I don't know.
Yeah, and yeah, we're really like, do you eat green beans and mashed potatoes every day? Like, it seems like such a basic fundamental question about what life is in, let's say, the US, that we are not privy to understanding. Mm-hmm. Because fundamentally, it's just totally 100% different.
Right.
So it's no surprise that your way of viewing the world or viewing other people or viewing yourself can seem so different mm-hmm. from everyone else around you who's living in the mainstream world.
Right. Yeah, that's a very good point. And you know, something else that is interesting, especially in the context of the Halfy Project, being that most of, you know, the followers and listeners are half Korean or half, you know, something, is like in the case of myself, one parent is American, one parent is the immigrant, mm-hmm. right? So, so that dynamic in and of itself, I mean, you could talk hours about that, because you have one person that is in their home country, or mm-hmm. one parent that's in their home country, comfortable, knows how to speak the language, and the other one that may not, mm-hmm. you know, be comfortable, may not know how to speak the language, may not have access to some of the same comforts that they're used to, whether it be food or friends. Mm. And so that dynamic in the house is also very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it affects you too. Mm-hmm. Like, just think about it. If you've ever lived in a country that feels very different to anything that you are used to, and they speak a different language, and nobody looks like you, and you have no social net of friends and family immediately surrounding mm-hmm. you. Over time, you can certainly feel lots of frustrations, sometimes fears, difficulties, and you can feel just like, why can't I open a bank here? Yeah. Why can't I just rent an apartment? What's so hard? These are such basic things about living, and you can't do it, and you feel those frustrations on a regular, little basis. Mm-hmm. And that can affect your mood. Your personality, you know, whereas your partner, who may have been growing up in that country and is familiar with all the ways and in such a natural way that they don't even think about the difficulties of it, could just be like, what is your problem? Why are you moody today? What's so hard? Just ask me for help. It's not a big deal, right? If you don't have that understanding or empathy for your partner who feels totally like a fish out of water, then even that can cause like a, you know, a tension in the dynamic.
Maybe even resentment.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like such an under the surface thing, because a lot of these aspects about living in a quote unquote home country where you feel totally familiar and belonging to, if you are not part of that, you're fully aware of it. But if you are part of that, you're not aware of the differences. That's just how life is.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's why it's important to have great communication.
Yeah.
Which sometimes is lacking when one parent is not able to communicate fluently in
right.
a common tongue.
Right. And speaking of fluency with either one parent or even both parents as immigrants, a lot of times, and this is not experiential, this is more me observing, is oftentimes you have the immigrant child, and I'm sure many of you can relate out here, having to step up and sort right. of in many ways mature faster than your age, because you as a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, you have to maybe handle some of the bills or like communicate with like the light company or the energy company, yeah. you know, things like that, yeah. because your parents may not be able to,
yeah.
but you being so young and you're already, you know, probably more fluent in whatever language of the location you're in, you might have to step up and do that.
Yeah.
You know, so that is something that I have observed a lot.
Yes.
And even, you know, I've even a cousin of mine that I recall him having to step up and do that too, because his parents couldn't speak English.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. And it does shift the dynamic, right? Like what we can, everyone can have their own idea of what it means. Like, and what's the family hierarchy and the structure? Are you equals? Are your parents above you as children? Are you required to such and such? You know, and I'm sure it differs family by family. But certainly having a child taking on those kind of adult world responsibilities from a young age, I mean, that to me feels like a disruption of like what naturally you would expect mm-hmm. a parent to take care of the kid and introduce them to the world. But instead you are picking on a new responsibility that a lot of your peers might not be experiencing.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. Did you ever see, well, speaking of a friend who got married today, she's an actress, right? And she appeared in a short film that we saw called Sukte, or Homework. And her character is a Korean mom with her son. She, as the mom, doesn't speak English. The son does speak English.
Mm-hmm.
And he has homework assignment to do. But he can't figure it out. And he asks mom for help. She can't figure it out. It's a really basic elementary school homework, but she cannot understand English. So the premise of the short film is they go wandering on the streets trying to find other Koreans and ask him for help. Like, can you help with this homework? It's due tomorrow. We don't know, you know, how to do this. It might sound a little dramatized, but that can feel like the reality, especially when it comes to school.
Right.
You as the kid trying to navigate… Come on, think about it. How many of you went through geometry or algebra without asking a parent for help? Is there anybody out there who able to pass those classes without the help of an adult? Is it just me? You were about to say, oh yeah, no, it's very easy.
No. Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. And that in and of itself, you know, every situation is different, but that can impact the outcome of the child, you know,
yeah.
in many ways, you know, because maybe they're lacking, you know, or lagging behind, maybe in their schoolwork and their grades, and they're not able to keep up with their classmates. But I know, you know, on the flip side, that sometimes that can really drive like a child of immigrants, mm-hmm. right? To really study harder because, well, mm-hmm. one, their parents probably, you know, force them to or make them.
Mm.
But, you know, they have to figure out all of this stuff on their own. So in many ways, it can create this independence within them and just trying to figure out and just this, I guess, fortitude to like to make sure I can…
Fortitude.
Yeah, to make sure I can like get this homework done. And,
yeah.
you know, that'll translate to other areas of their lives, I'm sure.
Yes.
You know, moving forward.
Well, you have that, but you also have the flip side where it's like, this is just too much to handle. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm just going to drop out of school and I'm going to work at my parents' laundry salon shop
right.
because that's just the path of least resistance. So, I mean, we have heard cases of that too. Or your parents speak, let's say, Korean at home to you and that's what you're spending majority of your time. And then by the time you go into grade school, maybe your English isn't fluent. And so they're like, oh, well, now you got to take ESL. For example, or you get fallen behind in some courses because your English isn't to the same level as is expected of you.
Yeah.
Wait, why are you laughing?
No, I'm laughing because like, I mean, I wasn't to that extent of needing ESL, but I mean, me as a kid and I have, and I'm only reminded of this because I have a lot of home videos of me as a 3-4-year-old and me speaking, but you know, my dad was, you know, the 9 to 5, 9 to 6, you know, he would work and, you know, come home after, but my mom was a stay-at-home mom, raised me and my sister. And I would speak a lot like how she spoke English in my earlier years,
Mm-mm.
which is very broken. And I would say words funny and my sentences…
Obadea. We still do that today.
Yeah. And my sentences were not complete.
Yeah.
So yeah, even like with me having an American dad, like I still had, I don't know if I would say trouble. I don't know if I was ever like falling behind in like my communication or English, you know, curriculum in elementary school. But I know for me, it has impacted me to a certain point because you know, let's just say I wasn't introduced to a lot of big vocabulary words, you know, growing up. And, you know, this is getting a little off topic, but yeah, like sometimes that impacts like the things that you are exposed to.
Sure.
Like whether it be vocabulary or a certain type of language or certain ways of speaking.
Yes.
So, you know, as I got older, obviously, and I'm, you know, in the English school systems, you know, that obviously worked itself out. Mm. But the point is, like, for me, it even impacted me, even with the English speaking American father.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah. And I think if you, let's say you grew up pre-social media, mm-hmm. right? Or pre-YouTube virality, you're not really sharing the same, like you're not watching the same things and reading the same things as everyone else is.
Mm,
right?
Yeah.
So your input, would that be correct? Your input, what you're absorbing from, you know, the surrounding world may be much more limited than what everyone else is. Like I know for a fact, for us, my mom wouldn't let us watch TV. We didn't have, you know, like Cartoon Network or any of those things. We didn't watch movies. We didn't play video games. So like my cultural input, what I was absorbing from the culture, I guess, like slang or certain celebrity interviews or songs, we didn't watch or hear like any of that unless we were with our friends. So a lot of those times, like I just didn't have the cultural fluency. Mm-hmm. As like my peers. Oh, did you see like we were watching, you know, I don't even know what the shows are, you know, because you're just not.
Yeah,
I wasn't picking up on those things.
I guess I was different. I was exposed to like everything. I watched everything.
Yeah, that's true. You watched a lot of TV. And,
yeah, but I guess your mom was the one that really was like the gatekeeper of what you guys can watch in the house,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally. And my dad, like he's working all the time, right? Or he's on TDY. Or he also didn't personally enjoy those kind of shows or films mm-hmm. or music. So my understanding of cultural phenomena was just primarily whatever, you know, I picked up from my dad. And that could have been like 1950s music, you know?
Yeah.
So that really does shape the way you can interact with your peers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, why don't we hop over then to our relatives?
Relatives. Okay. Man, this can be… quite touchy and emotional because a lot of times when you decide to uproot and go to another country, you're oftentimes leaving your family behind.
Yeah.
Whether it be your immediate family or, you know, even extended family. And so this can… and I'll let you, I guess, kick this off because, you know, at least with my mom, you know, she came over by herself. Mm. But she already had her older sister, Korean sister… I think years before, actually marry an American soldier and was already living in the States. But my mom came by herself years after. And then eventually she sort of helped move the rest of her immediate family over, including my harmony. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I didn't get a chance to experience that.
That's
separation
true. You got
so
to live
much.
With your harmony.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But I know in the case of you, it's a little different.
Yeah. Because… I have one emo and she married an American soldier and then my mom married my dad. But the rest of my Korean family all stayed pretty much in the same town all those years. And they lived, you know, relatively close to each other. And it's just like that separation is so apparent. And, you know, you can have… within that distance that exists over time. And even people who have family members within the same country, if you don't see each other for a long time, it's so easy to drift apart.
Mm-hmm.
And then built on top of that is the expectation of, oh, you went to America, which at that time was better, quote unquote, than Korea, right? So you must be living a better life.
Yeah.
And you have this unspoken maybe burden like, oh, I should be taking care of my family back in Korea. Or, you know, I shouldn't show off to my family that I'm doing all these things. Or they will not understand my struggles in the US because it's just something they don't experience and they think I have it better
right.
than them. And I think over time, you know, in worst case scenarios, resentment or feeling like, you know, we deserve something. We deserve to benefit from the good things that have happened to your life. Or just believing stereotypes or falsehoods about your own family member who has supposedly moved on to a better life, mm-hmm. you know, in the foreign country. And I really think that can happen yeah. a lot. Especially when you are emigrating from a country to a country that is supposedly considered better. You know, right. economically speaking, especially.
Right. And maybe the feelings of the family who isn't emigrating from their country, they might feel left behind. They might feel like maybe abandoned or betrayed in some ways.
Sure.
You know, and that's just like not, obviously not everyone. I think some families understand, you know, but maybe it's inevitable with some people to feel that way. And I, you know, I've sort of observed that through, you know, some of the people that I know.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, I think it's, that's tough, you know, because sometimes you're thinking as maybe you have a family and the husband and wife are like, you know, do I stay here and have a certain type of life where maybe my kids will not be able to progress in life or get the proper education, or should we take a risk and move somewhere else for maybe our future family? So it's like you're leaving one family to invest in your immediate family. And that could be probably a very hard thing to I guess, battle with.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really equate that either. You right. can't say like, this is more valuable than that, right? That's a very difficult choice, I think, for many people to make. And bringing it back then now to, let's say, the kids, you're missing out on some important family dynamics.
Oh, yeah.
Like I would read, you know, I still feel funny when people would say like, oh yeah, me and my cousins were like best friends. Or like we all grew up together. Or like, oh, I saw my grandmother last weekend. You know, mm-hmm. like these kind of statements that just go off the cuff about how, you know, that's family. You're close to family, right? I mean, that's how it's always going to be when you don't experience that yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that there are huge, important benefits from being close to members of your family, because the way you relate to each other and understanding where you fit amongst all of that, family is the first place where you learn that, right? Respecting your elders with your grandparents, or learning to take care of those who are younger than you, maybe younger cousins, if you don't have any siblings. Like all of these things, you learn that within yeah. the family network. Let's say if you have a tight-knit family. And if you don't get to see family due to distance, literally physical continents away distance,
mm-hmm.
you also miss out on that kind of family dynamic.
Yeah. 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 That's something that even though a lot of my mom's side of the family came here, I mean, we were, you know, states apart.
Mm.
So even being in the same country, but being a big country that the US is, didn't really get a chance to have that close family bond experience.
Mm-hmm.
And even on my dad's side of the family too, you know, we haven't, you know, outside of maybe once or twice a year growing up, I feel like there was a lot of missed opportunity on my end too to like really connect with mm-hmm. the family. So that's something that I think about, you know, pretty consistently. And it's just, I know it's never too late, but it's something that I wish I would have probably had a little bit more growing up on either side of the family, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have some friends who live in the Philippines. And my gosh, they celebrate everything together. And it's so fun to watch, you know, on Instagram. Like, oh, this is such and such as cousin's birthday today. Yeah. And like the whole family gets together and goes out to eat, or, you know, oh, this person, my second cousin twice removed, is getting married. Come on, guys, get the whole family together. And I love that dynamic. I think myself being from kind of like that fragmentation where my Korean family's over here, my American family's over here, I always wanted that. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is something to, you know, to,
you just have to work a little extra harder.
Yeah.
You know, to
yeah,
keep
for
those,
sure. And,
those
you know,
bonds.
The good thing is like these days, it is a lot easier. We have way more tools to connect and stay connected. So I guess it is on us to take the first step to do that.
At this point, yes, because we are older and, you know, we can do that. Speaking of tools,
mm-hmm.
what tools do you need when you're working? That was my segue.
What?
You need tools when you work.
Okay.
So let's talk about work.
Yeah. So, well, one tool is, I guess, language. I mean, we already talked about language a little bit, but I'm trying to make your segue work.
Just forget it.
Okay. So let's talk about work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned it a little bit before. A lot of immigrant families, you know, they might start some businesses. And that's not everybody. Mm. There are some immigrant families who come over
of
and
course.
You know, they have like…
We're not saying like… I mean, a lot of the times that we have been speaking of up to this point is like the immigrant families who are coming from, let's say, a lesser off situation mm-hmm. in pursuit of something better. But you have people who are immigrating purely… Like they've got tons of money and they're just like, you know what? We want to expand the business. Or like we just want to live somewhere else. Or our kids, we want to send them to American schools.
Right.
And they come fully loaded.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean,
you do have that.
Yeah. Those are definitely the case. But I mean, I guess I could speak a lot more on, you know, the former experience, because again, that's just like a lot of the friends I grew up with.
Right.
And the things that I have seen. But again, just to bring up the point of maybe the parents are constantly working because they have to make ends meet. A lot of times you'll lack that parental presence, mm-hmm. you know, like maybe growing up in school, you might have like those… Did you ever have like the Terrific Kid Awards or like the honor roll ceremonies at school?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we used to have that all the time. And so, you know, my dad, he would actually take off work, you know, maybe 2 hours just to come. And he had the camcorder and he would, you know, film me getting on the stage and just getting my, you know, little certificate.
And that's kid it. Reward.
Yeah, yeah. So so I was very fortunate to have that experience, but a lot of kids don't, you know, especially if their parents are constantly working.
That's true.
And it's not that their parents don't want to support. It's just they can't.
Yeah.
You know, and so that could have an impact on I guess the dynamics of the relationship with the parents. But
yeah, I mean, that's totally true.
Yeah, I just think it's just a necessary… I don't want to use the word evil, but just to prove my point, it's a necessary evil for the parents to work hard. And oftentimes they are doing it to make a better life for their kids.
So this is the crux of the matter. Yeah.
So they're doing it so that their kids would study hard and would eventually go to college and have a better situation than their parents. Mm. But this is where I see a lot of conflict, because what if the kid doesn't want to go to college to become a doctor, to become a lawyer and an engineer or whatever, you know, and they just want to be an artist.
This is always the joke, right? Like, I'm an Asian kid with my Asian parents and they immigrated and they worked really hard and I dropped out of school to become a painter.
Yeah.
Right. And then it's like, I've been disowned or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of…
Such a common trope.
Yeah. You know? I don't know if it's irony, but it's like, you know, the parents come over to for the kid to have a better life, to have a good job. And they work hard and they sacrifice so much. And then the kid, you know, being in the context of America, it's like, you know what? I have the freedom of choice. I could choose what I want to be. Mm-hmm. I can make anything of my life. And then they… take a path that maybe their parents didn't want them.
That is ironic.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Yeah.
So, and then there comes this perhaps like shame or resentment between like child and parents. And it's just, to me, it's kind of sad to see, because it's the differences of the generation and the difference of mindset. Because I try to have empathy. I could see the parents' like side, like, you come to a new place and you make a life for yourself and you're working 6 days, maybe 7 days out of the week, because you're trying to, you know, send your kid off to a good school. You're at least you want your kid to have the opportunity to succeed. Mm. And then in your eyes, you feel like you've sacrificed so much and your kid is not doing anything.
Mm-mm-mm.
But in the eyes of your kid, or in the eyes of the kid, it's like, well, no, you know, like, I don't want to slave away and struggle and do something that I don't want to do.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like my parents.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it's kind of interesting to see that play out between the generations.
Well, it's like parents of what you're speaking of, these parents, they come and they sacrifice everything for opportunity.
Yeah.
Opportunity for their child. But from the kid point of view, they've seen all this. Their parents have sacrificed everything. So the kid has a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the conflict happens. Because for a kid, it's like, well, now I have the choice. I have the freedom to choose what I want to do with my life.
Mm-hmm. My life.
Well, now I can do what I want because we're not struggling. I'm not in a struggling situation. While the parents are like, well, we struggle to give you opportunity so you don't have to struggle like us.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, I feel like, the conflict happening there.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It kind of pulls together. Like I read this article on, was it BBC? where they were saying there's a phenomenon right now where the children of Korean immigrants, many of them are returning to Korea in pursuit of a quote-unquote better life. And yeah. Isn't it just crazy to think that in such a short amount of time, kids who grew up with literally first-generation immigrant parents to the U.S. are being like, okay, bye America, and moving to Korea.
Right.
Hoping to live a better life.
Right. I mean, that is interesting because, I mean, it might be true. You
I did that.
a bit, but like, yeah, but it's like, but again, you have decades, a lot of times of like, when your parents left, Korea was in a certain, economic state.
Mm-mm-mm.
And they left at a time where they felt like America just looked much better, right?
Yeah.
And there was more opportunity. But then now Korea has built up so much and, it's not in the same place as, two, three decades ago.
Yeah.
And now the kids are like, you know what? Peace out, America. Peace out, family. I'm going to go to Korea and I'm going to make something of myself. Like,
right.
I could see where like it could be frustrating for the parents.
Yeah.
And maybe it almost feels like a slap in the face. And I don't want to speak for everyone. It's not everybody, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's an interesting sort of thing that has happened.
It is really interesting to see that. And I it's funny. I was reading it and I was like, oh, haha, these people, what do they think they're going to do in Korea? And then I was like, wait a minute. I'm
you.
So hypocritical, right? I did that for 10 years.
Yeah.
Right? Because you want to make something of yourself and Korea looks really shiny right now.
I mean, grass is always greener,
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I think we touched a little bit on language before already, but just briefly, of course, we can talk about the language barrier. I think if your parents do not speak the same language fluently as you grew up, and let's say if you're growing up in the US and you're attending a school that speaks only English, then you're more inclined to be speaking English more fluently than your parents who come to the US later in their life. And we know that communication is very key to understanding each other. So if you're built on top of cultural differences, you're built on top of maybe a strain already due to your parents' work and the extra burden put on you, are you a latchkey kid, all of these things. And then built on top of that as well, maybe you have a language barrier between parent and child. It's no wonder that sometimes these relationships can be very, very strained.
Yeah.
I read a lot or I hear a lot like, I'm so grateful to my parents because they sacrificed everything. Therefore, I am going to give back to them. But I hear less often, oh, my parents are my best friend and I can share with them everything in my life.
Mm.
So it is curious just to hear this. Again, this is very anecdotal of what we hear, what people tell us. And it just seems like a lot of times when your parents have lived through that kind of experience and you're second gen or 1.5, I feel like a lot of times it's done out of duty, like as opposed to like we're really close with each other because we understand each other and we like each other and we share jokes with each other and we talk about everything. Seems less of that and sometimes a lot of duty.
Yeah. I mean, this, it doesn't help that I guess the distinction of hierarchy is built into the parent and son-daughter relationship. So you're never going to really be like best friends in most like parent-children like relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But it is interesting that to see. I have a family member that is very close to their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so cool to see.
Yeah.
I'm creeping on their socials or whatever. And they're just constantly like always getting together, eating dinner, hanging out with the kids and the grandkids.
Right?
And like that is like, wow. Not that I don't have that, but my dynamics are different. Like with my mom and all of that. So it's just like, wow. Like that is what could be the case,
right?
Is
that funny?
It is funny.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe in the future,
Of course, this is not all families. And I know we keep qualifying it that way. This is what we maybe have experienced ourselves or what we have heard and learned while we've been doing this project. But yeah, language is such a really, like, such a key thing because especially later on in life, let's say if you're in our shoes, later on in life, you're like, you know what? I really want to learn about Korea, and I would like to meet my Korean family who all live in Korea, and I'd like to learn more about what it means to be Korean. You might not have access to that because of, one, distance. Korea is there and you're in a new country. And two, the language aspect, because you don't speak Korean. And so already you're like, okay, now I got to learn Korean. And that, you know, that can be difficult. And then you can build on top of that as well. If you have a parent that's like, why do you care about learning Korean? Why do you care about all that? We left that all behind. You should learn English and focus on being in America and succeeding here. So you're kind of swimming upstream sometimes in this cases. And I do know that like some people can feel resentment to their parents. Like, why didn't you teach me? Why didn't you teach me Korean when we were growing up? Then I wouldn't have such a hard time now understanding you or understanding where I'm from. And it's just, a lot of it is just, I mean, it starts with the logistical aspect of immigration.
Yeah.
Immigrating to a new family. It's not like your parents want to distance you.
Right.
Right? It's not like they want you to feel these hardships. I hope not. I hope no parent is wishing that on their child. I hope you have a hard upbringing. You know, I don't think anyone is wishing that.
Right.
So it's crazy. It just starts literally with like this logistical aspect.
Yeah. I mean, there's no handbook on, you know, immigrating to another…
Well, at least I haven't seen it.
I mean, there might be now. You know? If you Google it… I mean, don't Google it because you'll probably find some. Yeah, prove me wrong, right. But you get what I'm saying. Like, you know, our parents did not have… like a guide or a 1-2-3-step process of like, this is how you immigrate. This is how you get your family, you know, adjusted. And this is how you have relationships with your, you know, second generation kid. It's all like them just doing their best. Even sometimes when they're messing up and maybe they're not doing it in the best way possible. It's, you know, many times it's all they know how to do. So I think it's just a matter of, we have to try to understand both sides and have a little empathy.
Which is why having like a podcast like this or maybe YouTube channels similar to the Hafi Project, people who are speaking in a more public forum about these things, that is why it is so cool right now. And I also think that is why we're having so much discussion about this. It seems so trendy for people to be like, hey, I'm Nugu and I was born in the US, but my parents are from such and such country. I'm a kid of immigrants. Like it almost feels trendy sometimes when I see this. And I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but it is interesting to see it bring up in conversation so much more. And this conversation is happening more and more. And I think it's because collectively, kids of immigrants or immigrant families collectively are digesting all of this stuff that has happened in the past years of their life, of their childhood and their teenhood, and if you call it that, you know, and their relationship with their parents.
Yeah. And I just think it's also like the hunger for representation. Like it's very, like we're realizing the importance of that, especially nowadays, right? Which is why I think a lot of, you know, immigrants or children of immigrants are like, hey, like, why hasn't my story been told? You know, or like, who are the people that look like me that grew up the way I did? Like, where are they? Like, am I the only one in this situation? But I mean, I wish we would have pulled up some statistics on like how many immigrant families there are and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, I'm pretty sure there's a pretty significant amount of like families that have immigrated that are either first gen or like maybe even second gen, you know, families that immigrated even a couple decades ago, because that's a huge, I mean, this is a nation technically of immigrants, you know, US. Even from the very beginning. So we're from everywhere. But yeah, it would just like, there's so many of us and so many different flavors and styles of, you know, immigrant families and situations that I think it is about time for, you know, our stories to be heard and, you know, our experiences to be told.
And, you know, during this episode, we've really come from an American standpoint, talking about immigrating to the US and what that's been like and what that could be like. And though your circumstances might be different, maybe you have immigrated to Korea or your parents immigrated to Korea or another country. I think that a lot of these points that we've touched on are very similar. Wherever you are in the world, this language, parent dynamic, work, you know, all of those maybe, I don't want to say roadblocks, but sometimes obstacles that can come in your way of getting acclimated to the nation you've immigrated to, or trying to understand your parents and understanding yourself and your culture of where your parents came from. I think that is pretty similar across the board, these things that we've talked about.
Yeah.
Now, we have talked a lot about maybe, I guess, things that can sound like, oh, this is negative. And we don't mean to be negative. We mean to just be straightforward. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, that's, you know, that's what happened. That's what the case is. And I think you and I are pretty well-adjusted people, regardless.
I hope so.
Of difficulties we may have faced in our life. Yeah, we're going to get like writers who are like, no, you guys are the worst. No, but we want to also talk about the positives. Like if we're going to really put a period on it, positives. I think there are a lot of positives to having grown up the way we did.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe sometimes it can take you a while to acknowledge that because you're still digesting and still ripping apart the trauma and trying to separate that from culture passed down to you versus trauma passed down to you. I understand it can take a while to do that. But there are some things that I think you are granted, or at least you are granted an entryway to having these positives,
mm-hmm.
if you so choose to accept them.
Very true.
And the first one is, you want to say?
Sure.
You opened your mouth. Like,
Well, I mean, it's in no particular order, but yeah. The first one could be you're a more well-rounded, culturally savvy person, right? You get to have the experiences of different cultures, maybe different languages. And that comes with it just so much. Like your world is so much bigger.
Mm-mm.
Like I feel like my world, now hindsight looking back on how I grew up, my world is, you know, so much bigger than a lot of people's because I'm introduced to different styles of food, different styles of music, different, you know, languages. And so that doesn't make me a better person. It's just cool. It's just awesome. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you're just a better person.
No, you're just better than everyone. but it's like it gives your life a little bit of flavor.
I agree.
You know what I mean? So instead of just being salt, pepper, you know, you got a little gochujang up in there and, you know, I don't know, some other spices. But it's really cool. The point is, it's really cool. And you get to be like, you hear this all the time, especially with biracial people. You get the best of both worlds, you know, and I think that's true.
And this goes back, I mean, it really comes down to how much are you willing to take that opportunity? Because it is true that sometimes it can be hard to balance two cultures. And people are asking you all the time, so which one do you relate more to? Like, which country do you like better? Like, you're going to hear this all the time. And sometimes you might feel like they're implicitly telling you, you got to pick one. But in reality, if you choose to forge ahead and understand, oh, you know, I'm going to learn both cultures. You know, I'm going to learn both languages.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I'm going to prize both equally. You are granted the opportunity to have a greater understanding, like cultural savviness.
Yeah.
So I think that is a huge positive. And of course, jumping on top of that, being bilingual. If you choose to be. Sometimes your parents teach you. Sometimes they don't. But if you grew up hearing it, you're light years ahead of other people.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true. Or being multilingual. If you've got parents from two different countries and they both immigrated to the US or the UK where then you grew up speaking English. Now you can… Wow, I've got three languages in my pocket.
Right.
Like you have… And it can come very naturally.
Right. I mean, there are cases where like immigrant parents might… they might have their native tongue, but they might speak to each other in their secondary language. So, for example, one person might be, I don't know, Korean and the other parent might be German. Mm-hmm. But they don't speak each other's native tongue, so they speak to each other in English. Mm-hmm. So, the child might be exposed to three different languages potentially.
Right.
And I've seen different cases of that, and that is just… That is like something to envy. That is so cool.
It is something to envy. Yeah. I totally agree because it is also true with languages like… Through a language, you view the world a little bit differently. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like if when I'm speaking Korean or I'm learning about things through Korean language, you view it differently than if I learned it through English, right? Or certain people. I think another thing that's very positive about, say you had a difficult upbringing or, you know, you encountered just a lot of these things we talked about. As an immigrant child, you can really experience true compassion. Like if you know what it's like to have gone through a difficult time, or you know what it's like to have a difficult parent, or you know what it's like to struggle in school, those who go through these hardships, I believe can come out with greater compassion for others who are similarly struggling.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that's really such a beautiful thing that comes out of difficulty. If you go through a difficult time, you can definitely come out with more compassion. Again, it can be a choice. You can also come out hard-fisted and be like, well, I did it, so deal with it. You can do it too.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can come out with, hey, let me help you along so you don't have to struggle like I did. And I think that's a really big positive.
Yeah. Another great thing is you might have the ability to have different opportunities. For example, like myself, I had the privilege of being able to move to Korea with a visa that allowed me to, you know, easily just move there and work and just sort of live my life as a Korean would, you know, with very little limitation. And so, you know, that might be a similar situation with you, you know, and it doesn't have to be like drastic, like, oh, you can live between countries, but that, I mean, that could be it. You can have multiple passports, those sorts of things. But like, even like work or like your relationship opportunities can expand because you're able to connect with more people because you have more, you know, I guess you have different cultural touch points.
Yes.
So I think that is something that's really cool.
Yeah. And I think the final point that kind of hops on top of that is the people that you meet. Now, in my experience, I don't know if this is true for everyone. I know it's definitely true for a number of people I've spoken with. But when you are, let's say, the sole Korean living in a tiny town somewhere and everyone else is white, you might attract people who are not white, even if they're not Korean. Right?
Yeah.
So you have the kid from Puerto Rico who sees you is like, I know you're different too. And you bond, right? Sometimes your differences can bring totally different people together.
Right.
And I think that is so cool. Like if you grew up, say, in Korea and you're Korean, you might only hang out with Koreans. But if you are Korean and you're in, you know, a small town in the US where there are no other Koreans, then, you know, by proxy, you might reach out to, let's say, someone who is almost more similar to you, Chinese student. And then you learn about China and you're like, oh, hey, cool. You know what? We're a lot more similar than I thought. And you just, you can relate to more people than you might have originally.
Right.
Because we like to flock together.
Of course.
With our similar type. It's a very natural thing that people do. But I think when you're put into another situation, like you can either be, you can choose to be alone. Like, well, you're not me. I don't hang out with you and white people don't like me. You can choose that. But like we said, this is a positive of an opportunity that you're granted, right? I know for me, for a fact, when I was in, when I went to college in the US, I hung out with just like all the exchange students. Mm-hmm. But it happened really naturally.
Right.
It's not like I was seeking them out. It was just like, you know, one kid who was from Indonesia was like, hey, you're Asian too. We have the Asian Community Club. You want to join? Sure, why not? And then you make all your friends. I learned so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened really naturally. I think that was a benefit granted me.
That's a good point. And it, you know, I guess I could like relate in that, you know, whenever foreigners go to Korea, for example.
That's true.
Right? They wouldn't normally hang out with each other, like necessarily, like in their home country. But like, it's like we're different in a foreign land. So we kind of stick together. I think a lot of times that'll happen as immigrants, right? Mm-hmm. Or even like you live in a small town with a small amount of Koreans, but it's like all the Koreans know each other.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't necessarily hang out if you were in Korea.
That's
but,
true.
You know, maybe here you get a chance to like get to know each other and become friends.
Yeah. I think you can develop a special sense of camaraderie, which I think is really cool. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to add to this topic?
Man, I think we went deep.
Yeah.
We went deep, but I feel like we could have
definitely… But there's so much more.
Yeah. I mean, we have our notes, you know, of things that we wanted to bring up. And there's things that we still didn't even touch on.
And
but
again, like we really narrowed down specifically to… Or more specifically to U.S. immigration.
Right.
Because definitely immigration to Korea. Like that's a whole nother topic too. But if you're interested in hearing about that topic… Or if you're like, hey… I would love you to do a deep dive about this country where I currently live. And I would love to write in and share my own experiences. We really want to hear from you. And that being said, I guess we're going to head over to listener mail.
Oh yeah. We got one?
Nope. So we don't have a listener mail because the podcast Season four has we haven't been on for a while. But okay. If you're listening and you want to be our first listener mail for season four, you can write us at thehappyproject@gmail.com. Like I said before, reiterating, we do have the website. So I think it's cool that we have like this little spot. Because people are like, where's your website? You know, how can I find you online? Yes, we have the YouTube channel. That continues as always. And we have the podcast. But now we also have the website. So you can definitely check us out there. And if you want to share your own stories, either on the website or send us listener mail on the podcast, you can write us at thehappyproject@gmail.com.
Yeah. And you know what?
Yeah.
I think a place like the website,
yeah,
we can sort of nickname it the Happy Hub.
Oh my gosh.
You know what I mean?
Oh my gosh.
Like it's just…
You blew my mind.
No, I'm just saying like it would be great. Like we were talking about camaraderie and community. Like this can be our community to share our stories and to connect and hear the stories of others. So definitely check it out.
Definitely check it out. And because Cedric said that, I guess we'll say goodbye. Thanks for listening. We are The Happy Project.